I want to share with you a couple stories, and I hope these stories help us to see this passage that she read in new and vibrant ways. So I'm 6 years old, and I'm sitting at the kitchen table with my grandma in Estes Park, Colorado. And I'm sitting there, and I'm waiting, and I just remember the sense of, I have waited all day long because my dad and my uncle and my grandpa went fishing. And finally, I hear the pickup truck along the back of the house, and I run out to that pickup truck to see my dad, and they're soaked, and they have no more fishing gear left. And my dad has this look on his face of just like distress. And so then I hear the story. They went ice fishing, and the ice had cracked, and they had barely made it back. And I remember my dad looking me in the eye and saying to me, "It was a foolish thing we tried to do." And I remember him saying that we barely made it out of those waters. And so it made me think that our lives are sort of always about this treading on the waters of life and death. Ice and water, life and death surrounding us everywhere we go in a lot of different ways. And so this is a picture of my dad on a good day. And yes, there's a little business in the front and party on the back going on. And there are things, life and death. And then I was thinking about this thing we do when we tell the person we love that we want to be with them forever. And when we look into that person's eyes and we make this commitment. And we have made a commitment to this person because there's no other person on human earth that makes us feel more alive, more of that fullness. But we also make that commitment knowing that there's going to be 1,000 deaths in ourselves if we're ever going to make this thing work. Life and death. And on a ship, on an ancient ship, when the crew was sort of signaled to come and take their watch throughout the hours of the night, they would ring a bell in a certain way. And so the crew member would literally sort of tune their ears to hear their bell tune. And they would go out. And it's a strange image, right? This bell that means life. We're alive. We're active. We're functioning with meaning and purpose. But this bell also signifies that death is imminent. There could be a storm. There could be an iceberg. There could be a pirate. So life and death. And all of our lives tread these waters of life and death at the same time. And so when I think about kids, babies, right? The babies have this distinctive smell about them. And they have this eyes that are just growing in, right? And this one's my favorite. Woo! Hello! And there's this sense with a child, and I don't know about you, but that whole first year of my two kids, it's like every time you go in that crib, there's just a little extra something you're looking in, and you're smelling, you're making sure they're okay, right? Because there's a sense of they have their whole lives in front of them, but they're completely fragile. You never know what can happen. They're vulnerable to this world, treading the waters of life and death. And then there's this other phase of life. And we see the experienced people in our society, these elders. And we see in their very faces life. And they have this dignity and this respect just about the way they are, right? And there's a sense of they have lived in these waters of life and death for a long time. They have experienced the fullness of what life can offer. But then there's a sense their days must slow down. There's a sense they must take care of their health needs even more now as death approaches for them. And so life and death, we are all at one time swimming in these currents of life and death. And we've been pursuing this series called Sink or Swim. And I've been inviting you to reflect on the letter to the Ephesians and this beautiful letter that tells us, in the midst of these treading waters of life and death, God is a God who gives you life, who compels you to swim on these waters. And so 2,000 years ago, this life enters the world in a very strange way, in a manger. This symbol of life and death, right? This symbol of a king who comes in a stable in a manger. And then at the very end of this child's life is a cross and a symbol of death for the Roman world. A symbol for all the Romans to say, we are the powerful people in the world. And every time you saw a cross, you knew, yes, the Roman Empire has done its work. But early Christians saw in this cross new life. They saw that as we have all treaded on these waters of life and death, that God has come to our world. God has come giving us life. And that in this decisive moment in human history, this death that we swim around is being extinguished, is slowly being put out. And so life begins to flourish and emerge. And the whole Christian movement is based upon this idea that God is a God of life, a God who gives you life, who allows you to flourish abundantly. And so we come to this beautiful passage that Becca read for us. And it's a passage of life and death. It's a passage that knows all too well these realities that we swim in. And the first verse says, "For everything that becomes visible is light. Therefore it says, sleeper awake, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you." And biblical scholars teach us that this poetic phrase, sleeper awake, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you, is actually an early Christian baptismal formula. So when they would line the people up in early Christianity and baptize them, they would literally say, sleeper awake, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. This symbol that for early Christians, all this death we swim around and all this life, there is a hope that life is coming to us all. There is a flourishing possible for every human being. And so this verse reminds us of our call to life, our call to swim on these raging seas. And then what's fascinating is the verse takes three examples in order for us to sort of plunge into the depths of what this new life looks like. And it says, be careful then how you live, not as foolish people, but as wise. And so it urges us that the way of death is to live foolishly and the way of life is to live wisely, right? And wisdom is another way of saying to live in skillful ways, to learn about who you are and who our world is. And so we live skillfully. And one of the ways that, and we live skillfully, but this is a lifelong journey, right? Of learning who we are and what our world is like and how we possibly play a part in all that. We live skillfully by taking, in our church, we have a spiritual gifts inventory, right? And this is just sort of the tip of the iceberg of sort of saying, these are the ways that I'm wired. These are what's made me up inside. And then we take other steps too. Donald Miller wrote this phenomenal book called A Million Miles in 1,000 Places. And it's this book that just challenges you to live a good story. And then he wrote this workbook. And this workbook is absolutely outstanding because it takes you through your life, through the highs and through the lows. And it allows you to kind of plot out, well, this was a low and this was a high. And this is what God is doing inside of me. And so this is a resource that you can take notes about who you are. You can learn to live skillfully. But there's other ways to dive deeper. Just recently, a lot of people are talking about the Enneagram. This is sort of an ancient Christian way of understanding who you are and how your personality fits with the world. And Richard Rohr has done an incredible job of helping us to live more skillfully, of learning that Luke J is an adventurer. I'm telling you, that's his personality type. I know him well, and that's who he's going to be. He just ran a 100-mile Leadville race. Amazing. Amazing. You're going to get clapped for that, dude. But anyway, the point is that living skillfully is going to be, Luke J is going to thrive in places of adventure for him. And then just recently, my friend's been telling me a lot about some of us have to learn more skillfully in our relationships with others. And my friend has been telling me all about this movement of understanding your pain cycle and your peace cycle. And so this new psychological movement of understanding sort of how you were formed as a child and how that affects every argument, every relationship. And so this wonderful little book, get the workbook because it does such a good job of walking you through. Here's your pain cycle. And here's the typical arguments and bumps in the road you're going to have with other people. And here's the way your peace cycle, how to work your way out of that. A phenomenal way for you to learn to live more skillfully. And then, of course, learning about your world. It's hard to find ways to quickly learn about our world in a quick way, right? One of the ways that I learn about our world is through NPR All Things Considered. It's such a great way to get a good perspective, to start a conversation on the issues and topics that are pertinent to our life. And lastly, a lot of us need to learn skillfully with our kids. If you're anything like me, you need all the help you can get in this crazy adventure called parenting. And this website that Stacy and I go to, it's sort of our go-to, this www, Live in the Balance. It gives little 3 to 5 minute videos on how to help the problem solving of your kids. And it's like, oh, that's so helpful. So every time we're like pulling our hairs out, we're like, okay, we got to go back and watch another one. And then the verse takes us to this other place. And it says, making the most of the time because the days are evil. And the root of this Greek word is fascinating. It literally means to redeem the time. So again, the verse does a beautiful thing. It puts redemption and renewal and beauty on one side, and it puts sort of this stagnancy and lifelessness on this side. And it urges us that if we want to swim, we need to redeem the time. And it, again, the hint that's here, because the days are evil, it's this sense that God is bringing life. And God is bringing life to every one of us. And those dark days are being extinguished, but we are called to be people who bring life to the world. So we live purposefully in every relationship, in every business activity, everything we do. We live with the purpose that we are to redeem the times, to make something out of all this stuff in the world, to make something beautiful out of it. And so I want to tell you about my favorite artist right now. So Banksy is a street artist from England. And he's very controversial because Banksy paints public buildings at night. But it's really cool, as I'm going to show you. So Banksy went to Israel and Palestine a few years ago. And as many of you know, there is just a whole bunch of pain in the Middle East. You read it in the newspaper. But basically, there's a 430-foot-mile wall that divides Israel from Palestine. And as you know, the history of hate and pain between Israeli and the Palestinians. And what's fascinating is this history of violence also comes from the way the Jewish people were treated in the Holocaust, right, by German Nazis. And so this spiral of violence in our world continues to go on and on. And then comes Banksy. So he's going, these gray walls that signify for us this division, that signify, here's the line of hate. We're going to draw it in the sand and pay a whole lot of money for it. So Banksy goes there and during the night posts these beautiful paintings, right? So here's one of my favorites. Look at that. And then this one. Isn't that beautiful? Climbing a ladder. And this one right here. Boys in their sandbox in a picture of the beach in the middle of Israel and Palestine. Shimmers of hope and shimmers of love, redeeming the time, right? And then he has this conversation that I had to share with you. My guide, you can paint here. There are no guards in the watchtowers. They do not come until the winter. Me, returning to the car after painting for 25 minutes. What's so funny? My guide, laughing hysterically. Of course the guards are in the towers. They have the snipers and the walkie-talkies. We are always treading in the waters of life and death, right? And so many of you will say to me, I can't paint beautiful walls late at night like Banksy, but I have a family or I have people that I care about. And I want to tell you about the Stutzman family. So this is Jason, Rachel, Natalie, and Kate. And I love this family, and Natalie was born with what the doctors call a genetic abnormality. She has 4 fingers on her right hand and 2 on her left. And the story goes, Natalie's their first child, and there was just tons of pain and tons of unknowns, and she was literally in the NICU for over 60 days, and just one of those nightmare stories. And when Natalie was 2, I lived near Jason, and we were hanging out often, and I noticed a really amazing thing they did. Basically, every time Natalie falls, it literally, in my heart, it just broke my heart, you know, when she'd fall to the floor because she's two and she's walking everywhere, but not great, you know. And so she'd fall, and I just want to reach out and pick up this precious girl. And Jason would just kind of be like, hold me back. And he would start clapping. And then Rachel would start clapping. And then you would watch their little girl work her way up with the biggest smile you can imagine that she can do it. And it's absolutely jarring the first time you've seen it. And then when you've seen it over and over, they just clap. And this girl, she knows she is no different than any other girl. And Jason told me, we want her to know that she can do this, that she can live life. Jason and Rachel are redeeming the time in their family. They're taking the places that were broken and pain and making them something beautiful. So then the last one in that three, it says, so do not be ignorant, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And this word is fascinating. So then again, we have these treading the water of life and death. And we have on one side, ignorance. And on the other side, knowledge. And then we have God put into this equation. And the verb here literally means grasp after the truth with all of your mind and all of your heart. So it literally is this cognitive, do everything you can to know who this God is that you are trying to follow. And so early Christians were passionate about the life of the mind. They were so passionate that early on they created creeds and they wrote scripture. And early on, remember, the creeds weren't seen as something that was dogmatic. The creeds were seen as something that was essential to show them what this God, to teach other people about who this God is that they are following. And so I want to encourage you, as you are learning to swim and not sink, to live intelligently. And there's so many amazing opportunities. At each one of your table was a Pathways catalog. Now, if you want to live intelligently, there are so many opportunities for you to take a class, for you to read a book, for you to dive into your mind with what were these early Christians doing, and how can my life be more a part of what they're after. And I want to remind you, we talked about this, the mind, in that second passage in Ephesians 1, 3 through 11. It goes right to the heart of the mind. And many of us, this is a real stumbling block to thinking about being Christian, is we have a lot of bad views about God out there. And our minds can think in ways about God, and our culture can promote ways. And in Ephesians, I remind you, in the chapter we called the hull, meaning the watertight ship compartment. We talked about this God that some people think of a God who talks behind your back, and a God who curses you, and a God who excludes, and a God who orphans, and a God who discourages you, enslaves you, is suspicious of you, manipulates you, guilts you, and sinks you. But the Ephesians, the God of the Bible, is a God that is giving you life. A God that speaks well of you. A God who blesses you, as that beautiful song that we sang with Tim said. A God who invites you over and over again. A God who adopts you, cheers for you, frees you, trusts you, challenges you, empowers you, and helps you to swim. And then the last verse, as if it's summing this all together, says for us, do not get drunk with wine, for that is debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit, right? To which all of us are like, what's going on there, you know? And I think what's happening here is basically they're trying to sum up this great section, right? And remember that the only drinks they had in the ancient world were either fermented grapes, wine, or water. And I think what it's saying, in this wise and foolish, in this place of treading on life and death, hunger for the Spirit that gives life, hunger for the God of life who gives you more life. And then this happens. You will sing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs among yourself. And you will singing and making melody to the Lord in your heart, giving thanks to God the Father. Remember, this is the Father of the lost, the last, and the least, at all times and for everything, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. So where there is treading on the water, and where there is life in Christian communities, there's singing and there's a joyous thankfulness that emerges from us all. And so we are called, as we tread on this water, as we learn to swim with this great God, to live skillfully, to think about what is the next step of us growing as human beings, to live intelligently and to live purposely. purposefully. So every year, my family owns a little plot of land in Byers, Colorado. And many of you know already that my dad died when I was young. And so every year, my grandpa goes out to this land. And, you know, he's from the great generation. So he's going to mow that lawn and put that flag out and wipe down all these graveyards. And so this year, I was finally able to go with him. And as I went with him, for the first time, I got to take Trey with me. And so we got to just kind of reflect on, you know, my dad's grave there. And, you know, it's been a long enough time where some of all the grief stuff is really dealt with, right? The pain and some of that is all gone. But there's still this sense of catching you in the gut with this gift of life and this gift of death. And I remember, especially with my son kneeling down and putting the flowers in, just thinking to myself, my dad died when he was 38. And the sting of it is still all the things my dad left undone, right? All the love he didn't share, all the things he was supposed to do with his life. And that just catches you right in the gut with this sense of we are created to live skillfully, to live purposefully, to live intelligently. We are created to find that wall and to make something beautiful out of it in our families, in our communities, in our careers. And so it's the sense that I don't want to live that way. I want to live pouring everything of myself out, telling my kids I love them. I tell my daughter she's beautiful every day, and she's like, I know, Dad. And that's exactly what I want. And so it leads me to think about that amazing Candy Chang's amazing TED Talk. And this sense of she had lost her surrogate mother, as you saw in the video. And losing that led her as an artist to think about how do we sort of redeem the spaces in our city? How do we let people think about life and what their lives can mean and how they can live skillfully, intelligently, and purposefully? So she found an abandoned place. And she put this chalkboard up around that place with her friends. And she simply asked the question, before I die, I want to. And so tonight, as we conclude, I'm going to invite you. Tim's going to come sing another song. And I want to invite you just to really ponder that question for where you're at. And really think about the skillfulness and the purposefulness and the intelligence, that the way God has grown you. And I want you to actually come up, take a piece of chalk and write that on that wall. And write it everywhere. Just go crazy everywhere around there and hopefully it'll turn out looking really good. And I want to just end in prayer as Tim comes up here. God, we thank you that as we tread walk through the waters of life and death, you are God of life. I thank you, God, that you are with us tonight. And I pray, God, that you would remind us of all those places of life that you have called us to. Be with us now as we reflect together and as a community. Everyone said, amen.